You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
It's a bit strange to think of a 1935 play by a celebrated playwright as having its premiere in New York City only now, but that's the case with J.B. Priestley's Cornelius, which has finally arrived at 59 East 59 Theaters as part of the Brits Off-Broadway Festival after great success in London. The Guardian has called it monumental, and the Times of London said it was piercingly relevant. Alan Cox stars as the title character, Jim Cornelius, the stoic, ebullient co-owner of a troubled business firm, and Emily Barber plays the secretary, Judy Evison, who shows up one day to take the place of her sister. I'm very pleased that both Alan Cox and Emily Barber have come over to New York from the London production to be in this one. Welcome.
Hello there.
Hello.
And welcome back, Alan. Last time we spoke, you were in Pinter's caretaker at the Brooklyn Academy of Music.
Yes, indeed.
This is nothing like that play.
Yes, it's got slightly longer sentences.
A very different kind of playwright. Priestley, whatever his radical politics, was a rather traditional playwright, wasn't he?
Well, only in so much as he was writing within that prescribed form of the well-made play, the three-act play. But even though Pinter subverted it, The Caretaker is a three-act play. And when we do these plays now, we still...
Them in two acts now.
Well, I know. I kind of slightly wish it would be great for the bar staff because they'd make more money. But I wish we'd observed the intervals where the playwrights had put them.
Emily, the play's subtitle is A Business Affair in Three Transactions.
Yes.
A way of saying that it was a three-act play. Mm-hmm. It takes place in a rundown office dominated by a huge window that looks out on the street below with Briggs and Murrison aluminium importers on the window. What do the people do there?
Well, they work in an aluminium importing firm. So
we say aluminium in this country. You know
aluminium,
that.
Yes, aluminium. Yes, and I am the secretary. I come in fairly unannounced, explaining that my sister's gone to Newcastle for her husband who has pneumonia, and I've come to take her place. And then Alan is a partner in the firm. Yeah,
it's set in the Great Depression, so there's an extra layer of desperation that, or at least an undercurrent of desperation throughout the play. Because everybody's worried about whether they're, not only whether this company is going to survive, but about the economy in general.
Yes, and it's interesting for me that the thing that was so difficult, it seems, for this fictional firm is... The regulating of foreign exchanges. So money is worth one level at home, but another level abroad once you get into the markets and there are various taxes and duties and stuff. And it seems to me that what's interesting is the whole defaulting of a middle management firm like this fictional firm. You know, they link up the hardware manufacturers and the raw material distributors. That people are basically defaulting on things because, no one's got any real money.
Similar to some situation that
yes.
seems to be occurring in various parts of the world today. Now, can you understand why Cornelius has spent his working life at Briggs & Murrison? He seems a little bigger as a person than this place.
I think, before this sort of advent of the new media and what have you, is that people's ambitions were quite modest, and they stayed within a career trajectory that opened up for them from the age of 14 onwards. There's a character in the play who's been an office boy for 5 years, and he's 19 years old.
And complains constantly that he's trapped in this job.
But he fantasizes about working in wireless, in these new technologies that are enabling communication.
And Cornelius reads books about the Incas and the Amazon.
Yeah, and he's... And I mean, one imagines that he's not a university man. He went to technical college, but yet he's maybe kind of fascinated by geology. He's more interested in aluminium mines than the paperwork that distributes aluminium.
Now, the whole cast has been brought over from London?
Yes, well, 10 of us are, and then 2 people have come over to New York. They're still British actors, but, yeah, they've taken the
Have places. Your interpretations changed over these various runs?
Well, we have doors...
Yeah, we now have doors, which is great.
You didn't have doors in London.
No. So it feels much more kind of authentic, again, as you were mentioning earlier, to the form that Priestley was writing within.
Well, the set looks very real. It looks like an office that's seen better times.
Yes.
And it all the action takes place in this one office.
Yes.
So you have to be able to do all sorts of different things within it. When your character, Judy, first meets Cornelius, she laughs at him, and he's completely mystified. Do you see him as funny?
I do. I mean, I think Judy is a very charming, direct, confident person. I think she kind of meets her match when she meets Cornelius, because he is very charming and bright, and I think everyone else in the office is fairly quite, well, not dull, but I mean, everyone's quite monotonous doing their work. And Alan is kind of that spirit that she connects to. And I think that she does find him amusing. He says funny things. And
also, she's part of a new generation. I think this is something that J.B. Priestley was trying to catch, was this the spirit of youth. And Judy Everson is not encumbered by the traditions of the past.
Well, Ben Brantley in the Times noted about Cornelius, he's a funny man even when he doesn't mean to be, but that humor is set off by an essential sadness. And so you have to play that both ways.
Well, I think it's this thing, you know, he's very much an Edwardian gentleman. You know, he's a kind of man of his past. You know, he would have been through the Great War, as it was called then. There was absolutely nothing great about it, except nobody thought there would be another war after it. So, you know, and Priestley is very discreet about what his losses are. I mean, there's some exposition that he's a widow, but there's no great exploration about that. And I think when Judy appears, he's some kind of youthful spirit wakens up in him that he's slightly surprised about. One of the things
she breaks up the daily routine.
Yeah. Mm. And she's unconventional. She doesn't observe the traditional hierarchies of the office.
Yeah, you're not intimidated by.
No, I'm so honest, and I think that's something that he finds quite strange. I'm just so direct with everything, and I see through lots of.
And she talks about emotions below the surface, and you know, in the kind of slightly stiff office protocol, that's not done.
I have spoken to actors in the past about originating roles as opposed to playing in revivals. In your case, you can't be too intimidated by the people who played these parts originally. But Ralph Richardson, do you ever think about how he might have approached it, or just deal with this play as, well, this is a brand new play?
Well, I think there's something, you know, Priestley went on record as saying that he'd written the play particularly for his friend, Ralph Richardson. And there are certain idiosyncrasies of personality that, you know, I know from my own acquaintance with him as a figure, find their way into the characterization of Jim Cornelius, like his asking questions about what people's private life is like or what their job is like. He had a very vivid imagination, Richardson. I mean, even though he was renowned for playing very earthy characters, he had this great sort of capacity. He famously lived just by Regent's Park Circle, and he had a parrot that he used to called Jose. It was a Spanish parrot that used to ride around on his motorbike with the parrot on his shoulder, and smoking a pipe as well while he was on his bike. So he was quite a larger than life character.
Do you know who played Judy in the original production?
I think it was Victoria Hooper. I don't know too much about her. I know she was in a play called London Wall, which was at the Finborough just after us. So she went straight into that. But no, I'm not.
Has this been performed at all since it opened in 1935?
There was one revival at the Westminster Theatre in 1940, in which Paul Scofield featured as a walk-on, maybe a postman or somebody bringing something. And that was when J.B. Priestley managed the Duchess Theatre in 1935, where Cornelius premiered, and then also for a brief period managed the Westminster Theatre in 1940.
My guests are Alan Cox, who stars as Jim Cornelius in a revival of J.B. Priestley's Cornelius. Emily Barber plays Judy Everson in this production. and it is receiving its New York premiere at Brits Off Broadway, 5090s, 59 theaters. It runs through June 30th. If you want information about tickets, you can go to our show page at WNYC.org. Brits Off Broadway brings productions almost complete from England to New York for a brief run. Now, the original production had a rather brief run. I understand that J.B. Priestley wrote it had one of the most enthusiastic first nights together with one of the best presses I have ever had, and yet audiences interested but rather bewildered never quite took to it. Do you think it's because there's a certain underlying depression here? Since it's set during the Great Depression, people wanted to go see Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers dance.
Yeah, they definitely didn't want to see what's actually happening. And I think it's so relevant that people in the 30s probably didn't want to watch what's actually happening in real life.
On top of the people who work in the theater, there's a kind of a chorus of people who have already slipped down the ladder, like the stationery salesman and the toiletry saleswoman who keep dropping into the office. Do you know if Priestley had any personal experience of this world?
Well, he worked in a wool distribution office in Bradford as a teenager before he participated in World War One,
And then became a famous writer.
And also, I think he got a scholarship to Cambridge after he came back from the war. But he was from a traditional industrial working class background, who found himself in a management world. So I think part of the thing about the play is that he wanted to write a work play. He wanted to put the conditions of everyday life across which you could play a relationship drama.
Do you think it has an underlying socialist message?
I think it has a humanist message. I think it's about, there's a call to decency. I don't know. What do you think, Emily?
I guess it does. I mean, it has.
Well, this is when the Labour Party was still had not really had much experience of power, but it was establishing itself as the
true. But we're in a coalition government at the moment. You know, it's Ramsay MacDonald is running the show again, us having a coalition government in the UK. So there is a sense of
another thing that's happened today.
Yeah, that's true. But also the thing that the play figures but doesn't explore very deeply is the ferment that's going on in Europe, particularly in Germany and Italy. Mussolini and Hitler get a reference within the play, and I think there is a. I think Priestley believed that the theatre was a great humanist debating arena, and I think he pushes his message forward.
Have audiences responded differently here in New York than in London?
I mean, we've had great responses from both, really. American audiences are more vocal, which is a lot of fun, actually.
And they tend to laugh.
They laugh
at different
much
jokes.
More. Yeah, they do. And there's a lot of kind of British references that we weren't sure if they would get or not, but actually they seem to.
They also cross talk much more. They talk between themselves. That may be slightly to do with
bad manners.
but also that thing of you paid money for a ticket, so you can do what you like. There's a line in the play which is, we like to pretend that suicides are cowards when all the time we know damn well they're not. And last night someone went, that's so true.
Yeah.
Well, luckily it didn't happen when I saw it. The play. Is this your first time on New York stage?
Yes. I've been to America before, but not to New York.
But this is hardly the first time you've been on a New York stage, Alan.
Yeah, it's my
You did the U.S. tour of Frost Nixon?
Yes, we never came into New York. But I did a production of Translations by Brian Friel at the Manhattan Theatre Company a couple of years ago. And then last year I did The Caretaker, as you mentioned, at BAM.
And we've seen your father quite a bit here, Brian Cox.
He treads the board here.
But you're probably best known in this country for your role in Young Sherlock Holmes. You played a teenage version of Dr. Watson.
It's true.
Are you ever going to live that down?
He wasn't a doctor then. I don't think they made degrees for teenage doctors at that point.
We mentioned Ralph Richardson. Didn't you play opposite Laurence Olivier in John Mortimer's A Voyage Round My Father?
I did. That's absolutely
what
true.
Was that?
Wow,
like?
I didn't know that.
Yes, no, I did. I remember him again being a gentleman. I was just remembering the other day. You know, there's a great tradition in London, particularly, in England, of rehearsing in church halls. And I remember him arriving in a church hall with his minder, and us rehearsing this play by John Mortimer together, this TV play. And then I remember also running lines in his trailer. He used to call me Boysy, I think, because he couldn't really remember my name.
Well, the name Alan is so hard to remember.
Well, also, Alan Bates was playing the older version of it, so you know, maybe it was his way of differentiating.
Well, Emily, in your case, you've just left school, haven't you?
I'm still at drama school. Oh. So
somewhere down the line, you'll be doing a radio interview and somebody will ask you, weren't you once with Alan Cox
in New York when I should be doing voice and movement classes? Yeah.
Well, so both of you go back to London after the run?
Yes, pretty much. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for stopping by on our show. Alan Cox stars as Jim Cornelius in Cornelius, J.B. Priestley's play, finally being presented here in New York at the 59 East 59 Theater through June 30th. And also with us is Emily Barber, who plays Judy Evison, the somewhat mysterious secretary. Thank you both.
Thank you very much.